I am a robot, and I've got myself a military program hardware, and I tend to use that on any people I come across, y'all. So whatever you do, go make sure you stay out of my way. Yeah. Whatever you do there, boy, it's gonna be trouble, I tell ya. Hey, Tommy, mate, listen, I've got a bit of a problem this one. I can't seem to get it on the, it's not gonna work, yeah? It's got some problem with its chips, yeah? I'm not talking about, you know, potato chips. I'm talking about computer chips, yeah? You get me, yeah?
Well, I seem to be a bit hungry there, and I will eat the computer chips as if they were salt and vinegar, yo!
Sitting here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that new movie, I believe the moment.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Lethal Mullet here from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. Adam O'Brien here hosting, of course, the Lethal Mullet podcast, episode number 103, looking at the Olivier Gruner sci-fi actioner and classic film, particularly in the old days of VHS, the amazing Nemesis. This is a film like any other from the time that really hit pay dirt, not only as a franchise, because it's gone on to make more than five films in total, so four sequels. This is a film which a lot of people would say is what Albert Pyun was trying to make when he made Cyborg. This is an amazing film and an amazing action star. Olivier Gruner is a real-life action hero. He's an amazing martial artist, ex-French commando, and still, into this day, out there doing work in the security sector. So he's a real-life action hero, folks, and quite amazing. The first film I saw him in was Angel Town, this amazing a film where we get to see basically, martial arts on the street, so kickboxing used to better the lives of a number of people, of the friends to the character that Olivier Gruner plays in that, and it's the typical martial arts hero coming in, cleaning up the streets, a little bit like Shane in the Western Shane, you could say, but in the streets of the United States, and Olivier does an amazing job in it, as he does in this film as well. He's somebody I've always had respect for as a martial artist, but also the fact that he's transcending that and communicating what it is to be, you know, not only a martial artist on screen, but also somebody that stands up for people, somebody that stands up for the right to, you know, make sure that people are okay, particularly when it comes to the hard life of the street and the hard life it is to be those that are in the firing line of villains out there.
All right, mate, let's make sure we got all our systems in line for get this android on its way back to the cityscape, yeah. Well, there's not much out there but rubble, yeah? Oh, my God. Tommy, get him going, yeah? Well, I'm ready. I'm ready to go out there and show them what a robot does, yeah? I've got myself a nice little hand kit and 20mm Vulcan, yeah? Well, let's do it.
G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe, all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com, or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fbnet.popping.com. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Alrighty then, here's the news segment, folks. And we're going to be brief but fun because the films we're going to be chatting about are exactly that. Now, after my recent events of going out to find some films at a local location which had some amazing VHS, DVD, Blu-ray and other formats, even Betamax, folks, had all of it out there. I also found three films and one TV show, which I'm definitely going to be covering here in the next few months. So the first film come up is Dennis Leary's The Ref, with, of course, Kevin Spacey in it. And this is an interesting film, which I always thought was a very well-written script, where we see a burglar who's caught, and particularly at Christmas time, where the family comes home, and they basically have to hold the family ransom, or in this case, keeping them in the house while they try and evade the police. And, of course, it was a time where, you know, Dennis Leary is very, very, very prominent in the media and in film. He had been in Demolition Man. Of course, my personal favorite, the Judgment Night film with, of course, Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., and, of course, and a range of other amazing talents like Stephen Dorff as well. Great films. But I've got to say, this one too is really playing to the strengths of Dennis Leary as a personality and a comedian, no doubt. You know, it really has a lot of things that, you know, you like this guy. It's definitely a real like for what he's on about. You know, we may well cover this film in, you know, future episodes. Another one is the film Kiss of Death, which really shows off Nicolas Cage as this brutal, brutal man, and also co-stars some amazing people in it. Of course, David Caruso is the main lead in it, doing what Caruso does, folks. Samuel L. Jackson, you name it, folks. It's a huge cast. Helen Hunt. It's always an amazing little film that's always, particularly at the end of, late night movie sort of timelines on cable film and all that sort of stuff. You find it all around, but it is a great little flick. Another one, I found another edition of The Punisher out there. This is just the theatrical edition, folks, on DVD, but one I hadn't seen, and turns out it's exactly the same thing. It's just the less special featured version of the Australian release of The Punisher back in 1989 on DVD. Another disc I found was, of course, The A-Team. Now, of course, this is huge. The A-Team is massive, no matter where you are in the world. That was just one of those things. This edition I've found has about 6 episodes on a double disc format, and it's got the pilot episode, where obviously Faceman is not played by Starbuck, but played by Captain Power, and the Soldier of the Future, Captain Power, that Captain Power, yes, who's quite tall, apparently 6'5", folks. There you go, that's something not even I knew. but amazing nonetheless. So we'll be reviewing those at minimum on this show very, very soon.
Hi, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know?
It's
just like I was telling my mate yesterday, right? I'm not having a nice, you know, cold beverage and enjoy the show, you know, films and poetry and stuff. Right?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, welcome to the pub, where we sit back and enjoy a nice beverage, meal, and chat about the greatest films out there, folks. The ones that you should be watching in your downtime. That's right. Now, we're going to be chatting about OG. That's right. Olivier Gruner. This is a man I have immense amount of respect for. He is somebody that is not only, I think, a real value to the action movie genre and martial arts in particular, but somebody who lives by the code of martial arts in every way forward. We haven't covered any of Olivier's films here yet, and this is the perfect one to start with. Nemesis is, by and large, his favorite film. You know, I think next to Angel Town, which we will cover here soon too, folks, is definitely one of the greats. When it comes to sci-fi action, cyborgs, a little bit of the sci-fi, and of course, a great cast with Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa in it as well. Tim Thomason, you name it, folks. Directed by Albert Pune. I mean, this really has a lot of the stuff that you're used to when it comes to the early and straight through to the mid-90s actioners and stuff like that, where they really were playing with a lot of the miniatures and stuff like that still. A little bit of primitive CGI in some films, etc. But by and large, a lot of the stuff you're seeing on camera is practical. And, you know, with the lower budget films like this, is just right up that sort of alley. But let's have a look at, first of all, the life of the amazing martial artist and actor Olivier Grenier. He was born August 2, 1960, and obviously, too, nicknamed OG. So that's pretty awesome, considering my own one is OB. So, you know. Big salute to Olivier if he's listening out there tonight. He's a French former naval commando. Obviously, he's an actor, but listing his other talents, he's a director, screenwriter, producer, martial artist, and also a pilot as well. Now, that's pretty cool. He was born in France, in Paris, France. And in the late 80s, he moved to, obviously, the United States and began his career in films. Now, he's got a lot of films to his credit, over 40 or so, and a number of television series as well. Of course, obviously, he's done more than just action. He's done science fiction as well. And, of course, the big part is his action hero character of Alex Rain in 92's Nemesis, which we're going to chat about in this one. Obviously, he's also got the Force franchise, where he plays Lieutenant Sean Lambert, and the Circuit franchise, where he plays Dirk Longstreet as well. There's been a number of other amazing films that he's done over the years, Kumite being a highlight in 2000, and also Savate, which came out in about 1995, and I was hugely into, at that stage, freeform kickboxing and stuff like that. And anything outside the norm, Savate was something that, you know, quite interested me at the time. I remember watching the film being quite interested in just how that sort of martial art was adapted and brought to the form. And again, great film. So definitely something worth checking out. So Olivier's been a full-time kickboxer for more than 8 years. When he was still living in France, from 1981 through to 88. That's a long time that he was involved in that. And he was in the middleweight division. So in France, he was the middleweight kickboxing champion. He was also full contact, it was. So you'd imagine that's not the easiest thing on your body. So he's been able to take quite a bit of a pounding. So, you know, when you look at it, it's one of those amazing things that we can condition ourselves so well as martial artists and, in this case, fighters, you know. Kickboxing, you know, there's a differentiation, folks. There is martial artists and then there's actually fighters. And they're the ones that really, you know, all respect to martial artists, like myself as well, but fighters, you've got to give even more respect for with what they're doing to their bodies. Having the courage to get in there and the true conviction of their powerful technique and more getting in there and just seeing, you know, whether, you know, pass or fail, win or loss, at the end of the day, they are putting it right out there for everybody to see. Grenier was the middle child, the second of three boys in the family. Of surgeons and engineers in this family. So you can imagine they're quite a prestigious family, quite a brainy family. But, of course, he decided to go and look at, as he grew older, more physical traits instead of heading into the family business. So he was always enamored with martial arts and, of course, the other art, that is the art of acting and more afterwards. At around the age of 11, he was interested in martial arts heavily and, you know, really by what he saw on film and, of course, in particular, Bruce Lee. He'd seen Bruce Lee movie and, of course, at that time, it factored into him wanting to learn martial arts. Facing the pressures that we do as kids, he was bullied as a child at school. And, of course, that pushed him to want to learn how to defend himself. He started with karate with Shotokan style. Well, there you go, folks. A like-minded Shotokan stylist. There you go, Olivier. Hats off to you, mate. And, of course, boxing and kickboxing as well. And eventually into the world of full contact kickboxing, as we mentioned earlier. So, you know, it's a natural progression. Boxing, mixing with, of course, karate. And those two forms coming together really formed what was, particularly in the mid to late 90s, a huge thing. Long before MMA came along was, of course, full contact kickboxing. Huge. A lot of the fights staying on your feet and full-blown body blows, whether it be from hand, arm, whatever it is. And, it, of course, in the middle of that was Muay Thai kickboxing as well, which was very, very huge at the time too. When he became an adult, he joined the French Navy. And, of course, at that stage, he also decided to volunteer for the Marine Unit. In this case, the Commando Unit. Now, the name of that is Beret Verts. If I'm saying that properly in French, I'm not sure. But it's it basically means Green Beret. And, of course, it's one of the toughest, if not the toughest, commando units in the world. So I'd say the discipline he got from martial arts was something that really prepared him for that. And, of course, the high stress, you know, that puts that your body under and all that sort of thing, it definitely was something that helped him learn the art of combat. And from this, of course, you can imagine, just like the SAS and others, he had to go through, of course, the rigors of actually applying and, of course, doing the course to get into the commando unit as well, too, which covered everything from assault tactics, climbing, rappelling, boat handling, skydiving, scuba diving, explosives, hand-to-hand combat, all things that Olivier would eventually bring into his skill set from learning. And, of course, it's huge because, of course, that would also go into where it would become useful when he saw operational service. And, of course, he was in the French commandos, the Marine Division in Somalia and Djibouti in Africa, where he was involved in actual combat and, of course, anti-piracy in those regions, particularly Somalia, which was heavier for that in the time. And at the same time, he always had the dream of becoming an actor down the line too. So you got to think about too, when he's giving a performance in these films, you know, he has real-world experience to, you know, show that. You know, you got to look at some of the greats, the actors, whether it's outside of World War II, Audie Murphy, perfect example. And, you know, it might not have been a natural actor, but it was a real war hero, one that went through and really, you know, saw how that would sort of come about to bring things through. But, of course, one of the great things about this, too, is his experience is something he can bring to a lot of those films, whether it's from the acting side of it, the action, but in this case also what he used, utensils, weapons, whatever it was, in the Special Operation Forces Commando, he could bring into the film industry itself too. In 81, he left the military and became a full-time kickboxer, going from all over France,
from the French Alps and beyond to really push a heavy, huge workout regimen. And of course, he had looked for jobs in the regular world as both a martial arts trainer, bouncer, also a ski patrol member as well, and ski lift operator, where he was basically funding his profession as a kickboxer too. And the great thing about this is he started to learn the professional sort of levels, you know, as many as you go through winning and losing fights as well. It was the idea to, you know, be managed correctly and manage it as a business too, which is just amazing. From there, in 84, he began fighting as a professional. So he'd gone, obviously, through his early years in the underground, I suppose, and then moved through to professional kickboxing all the way through France as a middleweight champion. His titles are 1984 middleweight kickboxing French champion and 85 the middleweight full contact kickboxing world champion. It's huge, massive. And also the WAKO World Championships in Budapest, 86 middleweight kickboxing world champion, which is just huge. That's, it's a massive achievement to do, come through those. I mean, it's huge, massive at the time. So big respects to Olivier from that as well. Just huge. Now, if you're a commando, you're going to be very proactive when it comes to getting noticed, particularly if you want to be an action star. Well, that's exactly what Olivier did. In 1987 at the Cannes Film Festival, he went there and put posters of himself all around the place. And, of course, it caught the eye of many a filmmaker and producer as well. And it was only a few days later, when he arrived in Los Angeles, California, in the United States, they began to enter the industry doing, of course, screen tests. Grunier, obviously, was somebody that, you know, you think of in the wake of Jean-Claude Van Damme and many other European martial artists that had come across to the United States to, you know, try their hand at getting into the martial artists' action genre, you know. Here's somebody that really knew what he was doing and, of course, was in a lot of the magazines at the time too, whether it be, you know, Impact Magazine. Hello, John Mosby. Got to say hello whenever we mention Impact. Great magazine, folks. Obviously, Inside Kung Fu, Combat, Inside Karate, and much, much more. Probably Black Belt Magazine as well, the long-running one, of course. But the fact that he's such a disciplined individual, he's obviously able to get out there and do what he needs to. In 89, that came along when the vehicle Angel Town, as we said earlier, we're going to be covering that in, you know, the coming months, probably in the next couple of weeks, if I can, folks, because I tell you what, I love it. I'm a pretty big fan of the film. I think it's particularly for a first lead when it comes to action films. It really showed off his prowess as a kickboxer as well. You know, at the time when we had Seagal, Wincott, Speakman, Lundgren, Van Damme, you know, it was the right time to have somebody come out with such a classic. But like Van Damme, he topped it off with 92, with, of course, the cyberpunk classic Albert Pyun's Nemesis. And it really is one of the greats of the genre. So, folks, let's get into Nemesis. Nemesis came out in 1992, directed by Albert Pyun and starring Olivier Grenier, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, Brian James, and, of course, Future Cop himself and Trancer Hunter Tim Thomason. Now, this is quite a big franchise as it's gone on to become a cyberpunk quadrilogy, you could say, at this stage. Or Quintology, as there's a number of films which have been spawned off after this film. Olivier Grenier only stars in the first of them, and you know, obviously it's gone on to, a little bit like the Cyborg franchise, it's gone on to make others that would really stick out by themselves, I suppose, less than this one. Cinematography by George Meridian, edited by Mark Conti and David Kern. It was produced by the Greenleaf Production Company and distributed by, of course, Imperial Entertainment. It was released worldwide on January 29, 1993. But earlier in Japan, it came out Boxing Day, 1992. The box office of this film was $2 million. So what's the film all about? Well, here's the plot, folks. In the not-so-distant future, illegal robots or androids have become the commonplace of all around. And of course, many of those enhance themselves through many cyborg parts, making them, of course, just like White Zombie once said, more human than human, more human than human. One of those, of course, is Olivier Grenier playing the role of Alex Rain, who's an assassin and bounty hunter for the local Los Angeles Police Department. On a mission, he is attacked by a group of these cyborg rebels known as the Red Army Hammerheads. When he's almost killed by the main leader, Jennifer Gatti, who plays the role of Rosario, he then resists his attempt to be a mindless and dead-in-the-head cyborg. And, of course, part of that is that you lose part of your humanity. So that is, of course, something he didn't want to become. And, of course, be less than human. But after many, many days and aching nights and months ahead of reconstruction, becoming cyborg, he recovered. And then he tracks Rosario to Old Baja, or Old Baja, and then kills her. Soon after, his own people turn up. Commissioner Farnsworth, that is, played by Tim Thomason, our dear pal, Jack Death, has him kidnapped and, of course, brought in to do one final and one ending commission for, of course, the LAPD. And he then also has Nicholas Guest, plays Jermaine, to track down Jared, who has stolen a little bit of information that is vital to an upcoming thing that's going to be between Japan and the United States. They must stop it before, of course, the cyborg march of the Red Army Hammerheads can get it. Of course, Alex is then told by Farnsworth that a bomb was kept implanted in his heart during the repairs on him. And in that time, if he doesn't do it, the bomb will detonate and kill him. And of course, he's given 3 days to find Jared. And this time, before she meets with the head of the Hammerheads, Angie Leave, played by Shang Tsung, Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. What follows is action. Thrilling moments of absolute cyborg madness. And of course, potentially a lot of violence. All right, let's have a look at the cast here, folks, now that you know all about the film itself. Olivier Grenier plays, of course, the man himself, Alex Rain, and, of course, the lead of this film. Then we have Tim Thomason playing Commissioner Farnsworth. Of course, he reunited with Albert Pyun a little bit later to play Dollman. That's right, Dollman. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, as we just found out, plays the role of Angie Leave. Obviously, we all know Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa as the amazing Shang Tsung, the star, and also, of course, the bad guy, the villain of Showdown in Little Tokyo, and is just a mountain of material that he's done over the years. Rising Sun, you name it, he's done it. The Perfect Weapon, even, he was in that too. Yuji Okamoto plays the role of Yashiro Han in this. And, of course, if you know your Karate Kid, you know that he plays Shosen Toguchi. That's right. Shosen Toguchi, who is, of course, the primary villain in, of course, Karate Kid 2, alongside Sato, Sato's nephew. We also have Marjorie Monaghan playing the love interest to, of course, Alex Rain. And, of course, it was played by Marjorie Monaghan. We've got also Nicholas Guest playing the role of Jermaine. Now, who remembers Nicholas Guest? That's right, Nicholas Guest. Well, I tell you what, he's been in so many things over the years, folks. You should know it by now. That's right. Going all the way back to the old days, we're talking about somebody that's been involved in everything from live action to beyond, of course, too. And one of the interesting things about Nicholas Guest is that one of his first, or well, we'll say at least one of the first ones I saw him in was, of course, a role in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, where he played a cadet. And, of course, he was in the Kobayashi Maru scenes, so very interesting part to be in. Here's a great one too, Vincent Klenn. Of course, Vincent Klenn from, of course, the one, the only Cyborg. Yeah, we're going to be chatting about that one too soon, folks. If you like sci-fi actioners, that is a great one. Well, it's a mess, but it's a great one. We enjoy it for what it is. That is for sure. But Vincent Klenn, obviously, has been in a lot of stuff over the years. He was in Dull Man as well. So he's a dear friend of Albert Pyun's and one that's always there to make films with him. Also in Point Break, where he did battle with, of course, John Wick, Keanu Reeves. Also, we have the late, great Brian James of Blade Runner and Tango and Cash fame, folks. And just about almost all the movies back in the old days as well. Jackie Earle Haley in this, of course. We're talking about Rorschach. Plays the role of Einstein. Now, Jackie Earle Haley is also in Dull Man, believe it or not, too. Thomas Jane, the Punisher, is in this as well. Plays the role of Billy. Thomas Jane, what a character. What a character, folks. And, of course, plays a great detective in The Expanse. We also have Branscombe Richmond playing the Mexican man in this. And, of course, I love this gentleman's work all the way back to particularly in the 90s with Renegade. That TV show was just fantastic with, of course, Lorenzo Lamar. And, now find it on Prime, folks. You got to go and check that out as well, too. So Nemesis was first put together as a thought by Albert Pyun's last film deal under a contract he did with Canon. In this deal with Canon, he was putting together projects that would go on, obviously, sequentially in three runs, where he's got, obviously, wanting to make more mainstream vehicles after doing other projects that he had. One of them was a remake of Nicholas Ray's Johnny Guitar, and he wanted to put John Travolta in it, and it was obviously a procedural thriller with a police serial killer sort of edge to it. And then it was called Alex Rain, after, of course, the main character. It's interesting to see the start of what would become Nemesis in this. Canon decided, though, that Travolta's presence at that time was not strong enough, and which pretty much got rid of the remake idea at that stage too. At this stage too, he was going to shift it to having Kelly Lynch playing a deeply disturbed FBI agent who was hunting a serial killer amongst the neo-Nazi community. Of course, Albert incorporated futuristic touches and, of course, brought this together, making the film about 30 years ahead in the future. And even at that stage, too, thought about changing the setting to another planet like Mars or something like that. And of course, Canon, as we know, was getting to a stage where it was going to have to look at getting rid of some of these projects. It was burning up money fast. And of course, what ended up happening with that was, of course, a lot of the projects they were grabbing were not able to come through because obviously that company folded. In that time, Pune was told to put that Alex Rain project on the shelf. And of course, at that stage, they also had Canon putting all these very, very high budget, particularly for them, projects up. And of course, one of those was be Cyborg in 1989. And we know the history of that one being, of course, that it originally was going to be Masters of the Universe Part 2. But in 1991, after all of that, he returned to the idea of Alex Rain. And of course, part of the ideas that he wanted to bring in there was lowering the age of the protagonist, making Alex a tough street kid, working undercover for the LAPD. And of course, at that stage too, he'd looked at other avenues, like obviously things like avenues of the high level cyborg violence and stuff like that in there too. He tried having screen tests with Megan Ward to do, and began looking for, of course, a studio to come involved in picking up too. And with that, he also decided to raise it, the character from teenage years back up to a 30-year-old character. And of course, this is when he found, of course, the French kickboxing champion Olivier Grenier and decided to, of course, make him Alex Rain. So, at the Imperial Film Company, knowing that he had to get a production company behind this venture and get this film out there, Albert Pyun had read about Imperial Entertainment's work, and of course, one of them being the executive by the name of Ash Shah. And he saw that both he and Shah had a similar ideal on where things can go with B-grade cinema and low-budget sort of films and all that sort of stuff. So he met with the three Shah brothers, told them the ideas of the film, where it would go, and of course they had looked at the screenplay, etc. But one of the things they didn't agree on was the lead. They didn't want a teenage girl as the lead in the film. They wanted a tough alpha male action star character. Obviously, the time with Van Damme and Lundgren and all that, it was the right sort of business to do it then at that time. And one of the things they described that they found was, of course, Olivier Grenier as a French kickboxing champion. So, reluctant, but to choose to do that, Pyun decided, well, look, if I can make the movie, I'll do it. And this is the one thing that he needed to change to get the movie made, and he did. Of course, not only knocked him into high gear, making this amazing film, but also started the career of Olivier Grenier for real, and it really grew. And of course, once they made this film, it was only the start, because we had a number of sequels, four sequels, folks. Nemesis 2, Nebula, set 73 years after this first film. Then there was another one called Nemesis 3, Pray Harder, which has got people time traveling in it. We also have Nemesis 4, Death Angel, and Nemesis 5, The New Model, which was released 21 years after the first film. So it's interesting. And even Nemesis 3 is one that was used footage from the previous production that was deleted scenes, etc. too. So where does this film sit on the Hallenbach scale, folks? Well, I tell you what, just for the detail of what Albert puts into his films, and particularly with the budget, he really is, for me, I think, one of the great directors of our time when it comes to getting as much as you can, particularly films like Dolman and of course, Cyborg as well, getting as much on screen as you can for the money that they have. It's just amazing he's able to do that. And Olivier is an amazing lead, great in Angel Town, but not only does he deliver on that sort of tough, rugged action, But he really does in this as a bounty hunter. You know, a hunter and a killer. And it really works in this format. So, folks, I'm going to give this a big fat 4 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale. I hope you enjoy it. And what a cast, folks. This is an amazing cast.
G'day, folks. I hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at. There, you can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also, check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.